All right, this is John Jacob Schmidt sitting in for Matt Shea, if you're joining us late. And it is an honor to bring on a friend of mine, Cope Reynolds from Southwest Shooting Authority. He is a firearms instructor, a blogger, and a host for his own online streaming radio show, among many other things. But more than that, he is truly a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot. Cope, thanks for being with us.
John, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for bringing me on tonight.
Well, this is exciting. I want to take just to reintroduce you, because most people that I've talked to, hey, you know Cope Reynolds, right? And they're like, oh, I don't think so. I'm like, remember the guy that owned the business that put, if you voted for Obama, your business isn't welcome here? And they're like, oh, yeah, I know that guy, right? Okay, so that's Cope Reynolds. Because if you voted for Obama, you just demonstrated you're not responsible enough to own a firearm, so we don't want your business. It was a bold statement, got a lot of people's attention. It was beautiful. And that's actually what first brought my attention to you. And then, of course, you spoke, what, in 2012 in North Idaho?
Yes, sir.
People were very fired up. So let's talk about that. How what was the response? What did that do for your business when you posted that?
Well, to make a long story short, it went through the roof for a little while. I didn't do it. I got accused of doing this as a publicity stunt, and that was the furthest thing from my mind. I was absolutely furious when I went into work that morning. I was sick to my stomach. I could not believe in my wildest nightmares that the American people would vote him in a second time. Now, that's barring any you know, crooked elections and corruption and however they got him in there. I couldn't believe it happened a second time. And I walked about 4 feet into the shop, and I said, you know what? I'm going to put something on the door and turn those people around. I don't even want them in here. I don't want their money. I don't want them around my kids. I don't want to talk to them. So I went and made up a 11 by 17 sign on the computer, the one that went all over the world in, you know, hours. And taped it on the door, and I was real proud of myself. And I walked about 4 feet into the shop again. And I said, that's not going to do anything, because most of the people that come here are not Obama voters anyway. So let's step it up a little bit. I called my newspaper guy and got an ad in the newspaper, and then I called NRA.com and Ammoland.com and Guns.com and all these different places and put it out everywhere. I wanted everyone to know that I didn't want those people around here. And I got, of course, we got a lot of hate mail. We got about 6,500 pieces of correspondence out of this. That's just emails. I don't know how many phone calls we got. I got a bunch. I finally had to disconnect my 800 number because the liberals were, you know, calling at night and leaving music playing and leaving it on all night and everything. So, I had a lot of people call and ask about, you know, can I borrow that? Do you mind if I said, it's not copyrighted, pal. And, you know, whatever you want to do with it, I don't care about attributing it to me. Just put it out as much as you want.
That's a beautiful thing. They got a lot of people's attention. And you know what? It's interesting, too, to be accused of doing it as a publicity stunt. I'm thinking, so what if it was?
Yeah.
Who cares? I mean, there's a great message. And so what if it was a publicity stunt? This is America, doggone it.
Yeah.
This is capitalism.
It was. It was literally all over the world in less than 36 hours. We found it in Afghan publications. We found it in Spain. We found it in England, in Canada, Kuwait. It was everywhere. I could not believe over this stupid little sign, just because I was pissed when I went to work one morning, that it was everywhere. I had people sending me red, white, and blue flowers and flags and money and ordering stuff. I had a lady in Connecticut ordered $600 worth of ammo, and I said, look, you know, there's probably a store right down the road from you. It may be a little more expensive, but the time you pay shipping and everything. She said, I don't care. I want to get it from you. And that was wow. That was overwhelmingly the message there, the response that we got from all over the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something about that. I want to support people that do things like that speak up, or that are under attack from the left. You know, this lady that gets attacked with a flower shop, getting threatened with, you know, criminal charges and fines. it makes me want to, you know, order flowers for everybody that I know from her. You know, I mean, that's, and of course, her business just boomed as well. The, it's like the cake baking people. You stand for principle, and principled people want to support you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely.
Okay, so did you, now, did you have a show tonight?
Not till.
You put some great information out, firearms related.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's not till 8 o'clock Pacific, so we've got lots of time. Actually, 7. Okay. My wife has a show at 7. I need to produce hers, and then mine comes on right after hers does.
Oh, good deal. Okay. What's the name of that for the listeners that are there for?
My show is The Shooting Bench, and it's been on since I used to be on AM radio, and I eventually evolved here and learned what podcast was and online, you know, streaming and all that stuff. And but I've been doing it for about, I guess this year is 10 or 11 years I've been doing that.
Yeah.
It's available on iTunes and Podbean and under the same name.
There are probably going to have to get those from you and start airing those over at Radio Free Redoubt on Sunday afternoons because of the content out there. And let's talk about that. I want to talk about the firearms training that you do. Top quality. Now, I've not taken one of your courses, but your reputation is puts you out there second to none. Self-defense training. What are some of the courses that you specialize in?
Well, I've got about 30 different classes all together. Primarily, you know, I push handgun about as much as anything because your handgun, and I get in arguments about this all the time. Well, handgun is a secondary weapon, and well, it's only a secondary weapon if you have a rifle in your hands. If your rifle's leaning in the corner over there, or if it's over in the truck, or back at camp, or in your bedroom, the gun that you're wearing is your primary weapon. And I think that you should be extremely proficient with that first weapon. I think you can probably stand to be a little bit less proficient by the time you have to go to a rifle. Because more often than not, you'll be, you know, you have the use of cover and longer range and whatnot. You may have a little bit of what would you call it? A little bit of slack there. Not the word I'm thinking of, but with the handgun, it very possibly could be fast and furious and right up in your face and close. So by my way of thinking, I think that that's what should be the one that we excel with before everything else.
Yeah, that's great, solid philosophy. It's the highest probability that if an incident happens, that's what you're going to have at your disposal because it's the most portable and concealable, and that's what you're going to have with you most of the time. So, you know, it makes perfect sense.
Of course, that doesn't do any good either if you're not wearing it and having it with you. That's one of my pet peeves. I try to get people to have it with them all the time. But to answer your question a while ago, I have about, I think, 5 different handgun classes. That's not including the NRA classes, but I've got a personal defense handgun series, 1, 2, and 3, applied dynamic responses, which is a very advanced, you have to have taken a certain amount of training from me before I'll even let you, you know, apply for that class. And I have a long-range handgun class. That's pretty fun. We shoot service-style weapons, no scopes, no long barrels, no single shots, just the gun that you wear every day, and shoot it out to 200 yards. And that's an interesting, really fun class.
Now, this is what's really, really exciting for me. Is that you have this training going on in Arizona. You're actually going to be up here in the American Redoubt this summer. Let's talk about that.
I will be up there again. This will be the third time that, well, actually it's about the fifth time, but the third time that I've been involved with LFA and you know, there in that area. And that, this all started back with the rally back in, or the protest back in Olympia on December 13th of 2014. And that's where I made some great friends and acquaintances there. Just had an absolute ball. I've never been with so many Patriots. I've never seen so many Patriots in one place in my life as that protest. And that led to great friendships, including you and I and Bosworth and quite a few others up there. And later on that same trip, I did Personal Defense Handgun 2 over in Yakima. And then I came back 6 months later and did PDH 3. And now I'm coming up there again, which will be up in Marble, for another Personal Defense Handgun 3. It's a three-day class with a night shoot, and we go through quite a bit of stuff. You're going to shoot about 800 rounds, and we cover a lot of territory. It's a pretty fast-moving class.
Wow, good. Okay, so you're talking about Marble, and this is the event that many of us are going to be at Well, it's the weekend before the 4th of July up at Marble, Washington. It's up near Kettle Falls, and we're going to have information. And also that you're a new addition to that lineup or that itinerary, I guess. So we'll make sure that that gets updated as well. But I was really excited to hear that you're going to be teaching that handgun course. And you're also, I did not know that you were adding night shooting to that. So what does that entail, and what can people expect from night shooting? That's a whole different dimension there.
It is. It's completely different. That third level class has always had a night shoot in it. And what we'll do is early in the evening when the shadows start getting pretty long, then we start looking at your difference in depth perception and range estimation and everything, and how the shadows affect your sights and your target. And how you perceive things, and we keep doing this as it gets darker and darker, and of course we do lectures on flashlights and night sights and lasers and the pros and cons of each one of them, and distance shooting and your awareness level, your after action assessments. Everything is very different in the dark, and how you use that flashlight is every bit as critical as how you use the gun itself to keep from highlighting yourself and tracking back to your position and everything. So it's a heck of a lot of fun. It's very interesting. It's very eye-opening for a lot of people. You know, so many people go out and they buy a $2.99 Walmart flashlight, and they have a revolver on the nightstand or a shotgun in the corner, and they think they're all set if somebody comes at night. But I'm going to tell you what. When it's dark and you have other people in the house and you're not sure where everybody's out, it's a whole new world out there. And it pays to get a little bit of training on stuff like that.
Now, I run into people all the time. Now, I'm very much plugged into the gun culture, and most everybody that I carry, I mean, that I associate with, they carry, men and women, and many of them, they're kids, too. Mm-hmm. They're very familiar with arms. It's part of the gun culture.
Right.
But then there's a lot of people out there that they're waking up to what's going on in the world. They never really considered or never been against it, but they just haven't done it. And so then they say, I want to get a gun. What should I get? Now, this is interesting. Somebody asking you, what kind of car should I get? But
well,
what's one of the things that people that are new to this need to consider before they start shopping around?
Well, I'd like to see people be able to go to, and it's not possible for everybody, but I'd like to see people go somewhere where they could actually handle a gun, see what it feels like, see how it fits them before they purchase. Everybody knows, it's no secret, I am a huge Glock fan. I'm one of those people that I despise most, and that's somebody that is closed-minded. But when it comes to defensive weapons, I'm done. My mind is shut like a steel trap. I have nothing else to talk about. Glocks is much my thing. And I think it is both the beginner's and the professional's weapon. It is simple. It's maintenance-forgiving. It's absolutely reliable. They're very accurate. As a matter of fact, if you want to go to my YouTube channel, go to Desert Scout 1 on YouTube, Desert Scout and the number 1. I've got a video on there where I was shooting out at 300 yards with two different Glocks. and shooting, hitting a 4 foot plate out there. My best group was 21 inches in diameter. I put three shots in 21 inches at 300 yards with it. So there are these people that say that the Glock is inaccurate. It may not be as accurate as a finely tuned 1911 or a Colt Python possibly, but it's more than adequately accurate. It shoots a lot better than most people are capable of shooting. But I do like to see people get something. You know, people will spend thousands and thousands of dollars over a period of a lifetime, maybe, you know, tens of thousands, on insurance. And they'll buy motorcycle helmets, and they get fire extinguishers, and they get all this stuff, and they think it's okay, and they keep paying this insurance premium month after month after month, year after year. And you ask them to spend $500 or $600 one time on a one-time life insurance policy for a decent quality handgun. Oh, that's too much. Oh, that's too much money. I don't want to buy that. Don't you understand? This may be, this is the one thing. I did a presentation for a big Baptist church in New Mexico one time, and they were trying to get their congregation to consider the pros and cons of carrying a gun and everything. So I did a little research there, and in the 6 months prior to me doing this presentation, there were no homes burned down in the county that I did this in. Not one home in 6 months had burnt down. And in that same 6 months, there was, I don't remember what the numbers were now, but there were two or three murders and probably a dozen or 15 violent assaults in the same time that no house burned down. But everybody buys fire insurance, and everybody has fire extinguishers, and everybody gets, you know, they fire drills, and they do all this stuff. But why aren't you carrying a gun? The facts show, at least for that 6 month period, that it was much more likely that you would be attacked and or killed than your house burned down. But you don't want to spend $500 or $600 on a decent gun. So that's my big pet peeve, and that's one of the things that I really harp on when I get around people, is trying to get people to understand that and to carry and have that means to protect themselves and their families when they're out and about, or in and about, as far as that goes, in your own home.
Exactly. I was reading something by Colonel Dave Grossman, who made the same argument when it came to arming our teachers to defend our children. We talked about how many children were killed in our schools because of maniacs walking into a school in active shooting situations. But you know, they at that time of that writing, there were no schools that allowed teachers to arm themselves, but they all had upgraded and, you know, spent millions of dollars upgrading their fire fighting apparatus, you know, their fire protection, when, you know, there hadn't been a school burned down since, I don't know when, he put the date in there. Same analogy, you know, where you don't want to face it because it just, well, it's this propaganda that has been drilled into people's minds to think that this is something bad and icky. And unfortunately, it's even affected our believers, Christians, thinking, oh, you should to have a gun is that's like living in fear, you know. And but that goes right back to those same people have car insurance, they have fire insurance, they have a fire extinguisher, they wear a seatbelt, you know. And it's not about fear, it's just about doing what's wise and prudent.
Right. They're, you know, out of those schools, that the very few that have burned down, most of them burned at night when there was no school going on because of a water heater or something left on. It wasn't even during school hours. And so there was no injuries.
Well, we're looking forward to that training. We're going to actually, I think we're going to get that posted up there so people can take advantage of that. World-class handgun training coming right here in the American Redoubt up at the Marble event, which is going to add a lot of value to that already the excellent gathering, the expo, that God and Country celebration up at Marble. So we'll get the word out. And one more time, where can they go to learn more about your training and read up on that before they sign up for your course up there in Marble?
You can go to southwestshootingauthority.com and click over on the left-hand side. There's a deal there that says event schedule, and there's another one that says handgun training. You can go to Personal Defense Handgun 3 and find out all the details about it. And there's also an event on Facebook called Personal Defense Handgun 3 up at Marble. Now, there'll be a few little conflicts, probably. There'll be people that want to take the class and attend all of the things in that's going on there. It may be difficult for everybody to do both. So, you know, we're going to try to accommodate people as much as we can. But, you know, this is a three-day class. It's three full days. And the night shoot, we probably won't start until after the events on Saturday night. So try to allow everyone, if at all possible, to attend those events, those other seminars and whatnot. So, but we'll do the best we can to keep everybody going. I want to go to some of that stuff. So we'll just have to work that out.
Be a great lineup of speakers and just workshops and helping people become self-reliant and you know, get in touch with their heritage, their faith. It's a great Americana, well-rounded event. It's a breath of fresh air. It's really great.
Yeah, I can't wait. This will be my first time at Marble. I'm real excited about it.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that, you know, not to confuse people by them thinking this is all about gun worship. It is not. The firearm is part of our heritage. It's a tool, and it's something that we should be proficient in. And I know that that's not the only thing you care about. You're very involved in not the Second Amendment, but all of our rights, the Constitution and our heritage, the right to free speech, the right to assemble. You've been very involved with a lot of groups, and recently, in the last, as far as I've been able to tell, the last couple of years, you've worked directly with some of these ranchers that are facing very tyrannous type of government overreach, that are facing issues with their private land ownership and the relationships with the BLM and so on. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I was at Bundy Ranch, very close personal friend of mine, and that one hit me pretty hard, and I'm still kind of probably in denial about this whole thing. I don't understand how we have such violent criminals. You know, you can reference Ferguson, or you can reference 100 other events out here, and people are getting out of jail, getting bail after they've killed people. And yeah, these poor ranchers up there and patriots that are in jail, some of them still in solitary confinement. JJ, it's been 3 months. And they're over 3 months. Well, it's been about 3 months since they've been in jail, more than three since LaVoy was killed. But and they're still in solitary confinement. Hell, they don't do that in during wartime. You know, that's way too long for a person to be in solitary confinement, no matter what he's done.
Right.
And I just don't get it. I don't get it.
They're going to make them all as comfortable as possible. In fact, now we're letting known terrorists turn to Al-Qaeda and other fighting groups and to begin killing Westerners again while we're keeping ranchers in solitary confinement. It's maddening.
It is. It's frustrating. It's infuriating. And I think the most frustrating thing is that it continues to go on with zero accountability to the agents and officers that were involved in this and the agencies. And I swear, I just don't get it. It's just over my head. I don't understand.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And there's a lot of people that feel this exact same sentiment. And fortunately, the right people are starting to wake up. You're starting to see legislators, senators, the Coalition of Western States, and grassroots people take note of this and beginning to put increasing pressure, which is why they're demonizing those right-wing extremist groups.
Mm-hmm.
Need to, because they are actually building momentum. You know, this latest case with that disabled veteran, Joe Robertson, over in Montana,
right,
facing 15 years in prison. He's unconscionable.
Over a pond. Please.
Did he have a permit?
Over digging a stock tank? You've got to be kidding me.
Which is outside of those EPA rules that they're claiming. I know.
I have to be real careful because I want to say things that I shouldn't say on the radio. I mean, it just absolutely blows me away that our country has come to this, and we've let it.
Yeah. There is pushback, and people are taking note of it.
There is
increased coming back.
There is definitely a huge awakening going on right now. There's no doubt about it.
Now, you've been in contact with the Finicum family since Lavoie's death.
Constantly.
And can you talk about how are they doing? Are they holding up okay? Do they have support?
Brother, I'm going to tell you what. Those girls are tough as nails. They have a tremendous faith in in the fact that they expect to be with their father and husband again after they leave this world. They have unceasingly been at rallies and book signings and protest and just all kinds of stuff. Her calendar is full. And they have not slowed down. Jeanette, you know, once she talks about it a little bit, you can tell it's, and rightfully so, you know, it gets to her. But she wants to get that word out. Her thing is not to necessarily to bring attention to her husband's death, but to bring attention to the reason why her husband died and the people that did it. And they're remarkable girls. You know, I've been to several rallies and stuff with her daughters, just kind of, you know, hanging out and listening to them and down in Tucson and Phoenix and other places. And these girls, will put most men that I know to shame when it comes to, the way they speak of their father, and I don't know if I would have the strength to do what they're doing. They're amazing.
Yeah, it is quite a remarkable family, and they're not the only ones. There's a lot of great families out there that are facing hardship. I know that they still face the issues that they faced that drove Lavoie to the point where he felt like something needed to be done because the system wasn't working. It was working against him. Injustice was taking place, unchecked. And they still, the issue with their own land has not gone away. What's the status with that and the BLM trying to force them off the land?
Right now, the BLM has been very obliging. They've offered her deals that she's never been offered, that the family's never been offered before as far as staying on there. She hasn't made a public decision yet about exactly what she's going to do. She does not have any desire to go against her husband's wishes. She's not going to let him get killed and then turn around and over this same topic and then turn around and start paying BLM fees again. So worst case scenario, she may possibly sell the whole thing and get out from under it, which nobody could blame her for that. But she's not going to, or at least at this point, last time I talked to her, she has no intentions of bowing to them and paying those unconstitutional grazing fees.
Do you think we're making progress as American citizens against this overreach?
I think we would have made a hell of a lot more progress if we'd started it 20 years ago. I think that the potential is here to make good progress, but I'm not so sure it's not too late. We may have passed that point of no return right now. I time will tell. I think that this year, before the end of this year, I think that there'll be some hard decisions that will have to have been made with the election and everything. Her ranch may be safe until after the election. I don't know what's going to happen after that. I really don't. But I know she has a lot of support, and both locally and around the country. And I think that the BLM is trying desperately to figure out a way to save face here and not create a you know, world war with trying to do the same thing that they did at the Bundys. So it's going to be an interesting year, I guarantee you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that would be the rallying cry now that they don't want that to happen.
Right.
For sure. So what's your assessment as far as the country? I know you follow the geopolitics, socio-political situation in our country. We see things deteriorating, and we're fighting the good fight. We want to fight for states' rights. We want to be as impactful as we can. But where do you see America in 10 years?
Well, as pessimistic as it may sound, I think it's realistic that probably well before 10 years that we will see America in the most devastating condition that we've ever dreamed of. I think that we will call the 30s, the Depression, the good old days. I think that the death and destruction that awaits it. And of course, you know, there's thousands of people out there that will hear this and say, "Oh, geez, what a fear monger." But there's things in some about what we have to look forward to here, and it is mathematically and logically and physically impossible for us, I think, at this point, to turn this around. I heard you talking about EMP there before I came on the air. If that happens, two things are going to happen. Well, several things are going to happen, but two of the big things. One is the amount of death and putting us back into the Stone Age for a while. But the second thing that's going to happen is everybody says, well, you can't fight the government. They've got this, that, and the other. They've got all this technology. Well, I'll tell you what, if that EMP hits, they're not going to have all that technology. They may have some. I'm sure they have some protected stuff, some hardened weapons and whatnot. But that's going to put us more on an equal footing if that were to happen.
Well, yeah.
Plus all the people that's going to leave them to go and be with their families and stuff. So I don't think that holds water at all. If that were to happen, they're going to be just as worried about their families and just staying alive as everybody else.
Well, I've always thought it wise of us to learn from others that have gone before us. And I've read stories about the Great Depression. I've read stories of people going through the Holocaust and the people in Poland, people that have gone through Bosnia, you know, the whole economic collapse and socio-political collapse and civil war, and you see the indicators that they say, we saw this happening and we knew things weren't looking good, that things were going to get bad. And so you listen to all these stories, but we feel like we're exempt. When those same signs are written on the wall that something bad is on the horizon, you're shot down by people who call you a fearmonger or a hate monger. They love that one.
Yeah.
Just at the thought of being self-reliant, so you can weather that type of hardship. And every one of them, this is interesting, almost unanimously, their stories are, I'm telling my story to pass on so others will not have to go through the hardship that we went through, that you'll be able to prepare for it. You'll see it coming. You can take appropriate measures to strengthen your community so you can endure making it through this hard time. So people won't forget. But we forget anyway. And in fact, those of us who don't forget, or we try to take that torch and carry it, criticized for it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess not the word I was looking for, but
demonized.
Amazing. And here we are, and it does look like hardship. Even the economic, I was going to have Fox 519 on today. We're going to talk about the economic implications of everything going on. And all of the economic experts, I am not an economic expert, but I listen to those who are, and they're saying mathematically, we cannot get out of this. There's no way for our economy. They're going to have to completely wipe the slate clean and develop a whole new currency, and that would come with a great deal of hardship, like we're seeing in Venezuela.
Exactly. Venezuela and Bosnia have been great examples for what we expect to happen here. And we're due for a reset, JJ. I mean, that we think we're going to have to reboot this thing and start over because it's not working like it is. It's caught a virus and it's spreading, and an only way to get rid of this is to reset everything, I think. And it's not going to be pretty. And to think that people that say that we, I heard you talking about, people that think that we look forward to this, you know, I would look forward to what's going to happen afterwards, but I most assuredly do not look forward to what's going to happen. I have kids, I have family, I have friends, you know, I have guns, you know, I don't want to see all my guns destroyed or stolen. I can't carry all of them. I have food in storage that I want to hold on to and make sure my family gets, and I don't want to have to kill people over it, and I don't want to die over it. But I do want to see what happens after this is over with. And with any luck and God willing, I may survive to do it. Say again?
About that. No, I think I was talking right over top of you. We're not being rude to each other. It's just that with this system, when one person talks, it cuts the other person off, so you can't hear them talking. So, sorry about that. You were probably saying something way better than what I was saying anyway.
No, I just want to see what's happened after this is over. But I do not want to participate in, I don't want to have to participate in the action itself. But I'm very, very excited about what's going to happen, because I know that we will prevail. I know that we'll, as bad as it gets, as many of us is going to die in the end, ultimately. The American people will survive. The Christians, the Lord is on our side, and there's no question that we will survive this, our society in general will. I mean, we're going to lose, like you said, 90% of all the people, but ultimately, when it's all over with, the Lord will prevail, and He is on our side. And you were talking
Amen.
About.
Cope, we are out of time. That is good stuff, and I agree. But this is Cope Reynolds. Thank you so much for being with us. Look forward to joining him at Marble coming up. So God bless. This is John Jacob Schmitz and Informat Shea. We will talk to you right here at Patriot Radio on Thursday. God bless.
Thank you, JJ. We'll see you in Marble.